Our next case is number 25-1124, Barrel v. Teleflex Medical. Mr. Cernel.
May it please the Court, Mark Cernel on behalf of Dr. Jonathan Barral, who is with us in court here today. This appeal involves a patent on a life-saving medical tool that has saved countless lives in the decades since its invention. It involves three issues, two of which underlie the district court's erroneous grant of summary judgment of non-infringement, and the third of which relates to venue. I'd like to start with the claim construction issue on mounted on. Now, the district court in this case made the claim construction error stemmed from its misguided effort to construe the terms mounted on and mounted in to be mutually exclusive. Now, the district court started with a correct presumption, which is we have different claim terms, and they're presumed to have different meanings or scope. Where the district court then went awry and astray is in deciding that mounted on and mounted in needed to have mutually exclusive, non-overlapping constructions. There is no precedent or doctrine that supports that conclusion, and in fact, this court's case law rejects it. I would point to the Thorner v. Sony Corp computer case, which had a situation very similar where there was description of or in claims to attached to and embedded within and contrasting use of those two terms, the district court made an error like here in finding that attached to had to be exclusive, had a scope exclusive from embedded within and excluded embedded within.
Can you help me understand, like, even if mounted on means there's some overlap between mounted on and mounted in, what is your proposed construction of mounted on?
Mounted on means, the plain meaning means attached to or fastened to.
Anywhere?
Anywhere.
It could be inside, it could be outside,
absolutely.
It could be anywhere.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And in fact, we can look at, you know, I'll jump ahead to the prosecution history to show that that's how it was used.
Would that mean mounted on and mounted in have the same meanings then?
No, absolutely not. Mounted on is broader. Mounted on means it can be attached anywhere. It's
just
on.
It can be inside, outside, anywhere.
Yes.
Whereas mounted in,
mounted in requires it be at least partially embedded within.
So mounted on is generic. And mounted in is a genus within that.
Yes. And that's exactly what happened in Thorner, actually. Thorner, we had attached
to... Thorner involved different words.
I don't
find Thorner to be all that helpful because it's different words, different specifications.
Well, hold on. Your clock isn't running.
Oh.
The courtroom deputy.
Ms. Anna, the clock's not running.
I think it is somewhat instructive because there was contrasting use of attached to was only describing exterior mounted things. Embedded within was only describing things embedded within. And again, the district court said, okay, these are two completely separate things, mutually exclusive constructions. And the Federal Circuit said, no, attached to is the superset.
Right. Your point is that it would be perfectly appropriate to use different terms where one is the subset of another. But it doesn't tell me what the meaning of mounted on is, which I think is different than attached.
Yeah, and certainly, this court has actually found mounted on, again, different. I agree it's a different intrinsic evidence, you know, but
different words.
MBO Labs, the MBO Labs case specifically looked at the term mounted on said body. The district court, again, found a construction, just like here, that it meant mounted to the exterior, and this court reversed that decision and said that mounted on the plain meaning means attached to said body. We also have, you know, I get it, the dictionaries are not going to control here, but we certainly have extensive dictionary evidence, appendix 868 through 71, that's our brief below 2665 through 70, that talks about mounted on, the full scope of that term allows for attachment in some way, whether it be in, out, or a combination of both.
Okay, but turning to the prosecution history, you've got a problem, because if we look at 1993, appendix 1993. Here is a chart which specifically distinguishes this Hamlin prior art as having the camera mounted within the cylinder, peaks out, two side openings arranged radially. Why isn't that a distinction of Hamlin based on the fact that it's within the cylinder.
So, as you have probably seen, there's a very extensive, thousands of pages of reading.
That makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, there is a very detailed description by Dr. Baral, who was acting pro se during the reexamination, of the Hamelin reference, describing Hamelin in gory detail, including the fact that it's a dental...
Okay, but this distinction here, which is the one we're focusing on, seems to distinguish it on the ground that it's within the cylinder.
So let me just back up. There's actually two references, and you can look below as how Teleflex argued this.
Okay, but stick with the point I'm asking you about. And this specific reference distinguishes Hamelin as having the camera within a cylinder.
That was not the distinction that ended up carrying the day. It was a dental reference that dropped out.
So what? We've got plenty of cases saying that it doesn't make any difference whether the distinction was adopted. If you made the distinction, you're stuck with it.
I would agree, but I also think that every single factual point regarding what Hamelin was does not become a disclaimer of claim scope.
No, we're not talking about disclaimer. We're talking about looking at the prosecution history for the meaning of
mounted on. Yeah.
And there are plenty of cases saying you don't have to have a disclaimer. You can look at the prosecution history or the specification to determine the meaning of claim language.
Absolutely, Your Honor. We're looking at the claim term mounted on. There's no discussion in Hamelin that says, well, I'm mounted on the exterior, Hamelin's mounted on the interior. We're gleaning or divining some on the basis of the description of Hamelin that we're limiting the claim scope of mounted on to mount to the exterior. The reason why we can see that is not the basis for the distinction is there were actually two prior art references that were discussed throughout prosecution that had interior mounted cameras. One of which was Hamelin, which actually just came in as a dental reference, it then dropped back out. The other of which was George, which was actually, it's a prior art reference mentioned in the patent specification. It was part of the original prosecution and stayed in through the end when the PTAB finally reaffirmed the claims in reexamination. And we know that George has an interior mounted camera mounted interior to a tube, and we can find 15 plus references through that entire period, original prosecution all the way to the bitter end, where Dr. Baral and the PTAB are describing an interior mounted camera as being mounted on the tube, the thing it's interior to. And so that is the piece of evidence that in the totality of the prosecution...
This all relates to George?
This all relates to George, but again,
But George seems to suggest that it would not only cover something mounted in, but mounted outside as well.
That's exactly my point. We're trying to divine what is the construction of mounted on. So in our intrinsic evidence, how is Dr. Baral and how is the PTAB or the examiner using the term mounted on to describe prior art that has an interior mounted camera? They're clearly using mounted on in the broader sense.
George discloses mounted on. If George disclosed mounting on the outside, then it discloses mounted on in the sense that the board used that term here.
The interesting part is George actually uses the term mounted in. It talks about the camera being carried inside the tube. The claims talk about the cameras inside the tube. But the key point here is, how does our intrinsic evidence use mounted on?
So can we focus on that in the totality of the intrinsic evidence? Because for reasons you've already hit on, I tend to think that there's probably not a prosecution history disclaimer. But that doesn't mean that the prosecution history as a whole favors you. I think there's so many statements about Hamelin that are hard for you to explain that the prosecution history probably favors the district court's construction. But put that aside for a second, because the intrinsic evidence starts with the claim language, which you've already acknowledged. There's mounted on and there's mounted in. We presume they mean different things. We have an example of the display is mounted on, the battery is mounted in. Sure seems like the camera mounted on, more likely the patentee meant on the outside to be, which is the language used for the display. And then the specification, I know the claims aren't limited to the embodiments in the specification, but you have no disclosed embodiment that shows the camera interior the way you want it. So as a whole, the intrinsic evidence seems, not a slam dunk, but seems to favor them. Can you help me with that?
So even assuming the way you've described it where it doesn't have any disclosure, that's just the MBO Labs case, which said there were no embodiments showing attached to anything but the exterior, but still mounted on, was construed.
I'm looking for what in the battle between claim language, specification, and prosecution history, how could I say that any of those three things favor you? They may only slightly favor them, but it seems like they all slightly favor them.
I would say that, one, every usage in the intrinsic evidence is consistent with the broader definition of attached to. Every single one. There's not one piece of intrinsic evidence that's inconsistent with the broader plain meaning. I would point out that...
Did you say intrinsic or extrinsic?
Intrinsic.
Okay.
Now, there's nothing, you know, you can read every one of them, and if you plug in attached to or affixed to, it all makes sense.
We can talk about Hamlin.
Hamlin is just, there's ambiguous discussion where...
Well, you think it's ambiguous. Suppose it isn't. I mean, suppose we conclude it isn't.
So, back to Judge Stark's point, in terms of, like, what is the clearest thing? There is no way you can read the discussion of George and the explanation of George to be consistent with the district court's construction. Because again, we're talking about an interior embedded camera, and they're calling it mounted on. And again, it's not once, it's not twice, it's 15 times.
About a couple different figures in George, and you're taking a statement about a different figure than the
That's absolutely, totally incorrect. And I'd actually refer you to let's look back the way Teleflex argued it below. Teleflex was acknowledging that all of the embodiments in George have a camera embedded within. And they were basically saying Baral's disparaging prior art with cameras embedded within. And we said, wait a second, look at how George is being described in the prosecution history. They're calling this thing that you're acknowledging as an embedded interior camera, continuing to say mounted on, mounted on, mounted on. And again, we know that the PTAB was on the same page because the PTAB uses the exact same language all the way into the final decision in the re-exam. And so I agree that the re-exam has a lot going on. Dr. Baral, acting pro se, wasn't following the patent prosecutor's mantra of like saying only what you need to say and nothing more. There's some more there. But the point is, the more is ambiguous. It is just describing a prior art reference. And when we're trying to determine what is the meaning of mounted on, we can look at specific use of mounted on, and it's referring to an interior camera over and over and over again.
Could I, if my colleagues will allow, doctrine of equivalence? Because if you lose this claim construction, I think you're left with doctrine of equivalence, essentially.
Yes.
The district court, as I understand it, granted summary judgment of no infringement under doctrine of equivalence under the insubstantial differences theory, first for prosecution history estoppel, but I want to put that aside. I want to focus you on the other issue, which is, I think the district court said, you failed to adequately articulate your insubstantial differences theory. Can you show me where you think you adequately articulated what you were talking about?
I think that would be in the record at Appendix 8078. I would agree that function way result, you know, I think there was a citation of a local rule.
Did was cite to your expert report.
But I think certainly for insubstantial differences, there's plenty there. And I would simply...
What page?
8078.
8078.
All I see there is arguably one paragraph and probably just one sentence. So tell me where, first of all, which claim limitation is it that you're saying, if you lose on claim construction, is not literally met in the defendant's product?
I mean, there was only one claim limitation at issue in the briefing, so everybody knew which claim limitation we were talking
but
about.
But you say
the camera mounted on the...
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
You go.
Thank you. At page 8078, I'm also reading it the same way as Judge Stark, where it says, a person of ordinary skill in the art would consider it insubstantially different from the claims to have a plastic cover over the camera. There's no comparison of, you know, a particular limitation with respect to having a plastic cover or not.
Again, there was only one limitation at issue, which was you know, whether it's mounted on the exterior of the blade, that, you know, reading in the claim construction. And so that was the whole debate. And we're saying,
so you're saying
by putting a plastic cover over the top, that is an insubstantially different, you know, implementation.
What? Putting a plastic cover over the top is insubstantially different than having a camera mounted
on the exterior. On the exterior. Applying the court's claim construction. Mm-hmm. So we have it exterior, just putting a sanitary disposable plastic piece over the top doesn't change the nature of what we're doing here.
So the camera is still mounted on the exterior, even though there's sufficiently a plastic piece on top, and the plastic piece is the thing that's called the blade.
Well, actually, Teleflex's own documents refer to the camera stick, the thing inside the plastic piece, as the blade. That's at 8203.04 and 8187. And so their own documents refer to the camera stick as being a blade. So that's absolutely a genuine issue material fact on whether we can just look at that to find that there's at least an equivalent here.
When the district court ruled at A52, plaintiff has not accused a particular element of the McGrath Series 5 that he contends is insubstantially different from the 178 patent's claim of a camera fastened to the exterior of the blade. Is she right or wrong, and what is her standard of review?
I think she's wrong. I think it's, you know, she's just erred in terms of, like, there was one issue, one claim limitation at issue through the whole thing. That's, they only moved on one issue.
You say she abused her discretion?
I think she did, yeah.
In not understanding your theory, that would be, we can say she abused her discretion.
I think that's right, yeah. And it's just inconsistent with, you know, clearly that was the only thing presented.
Okay, we're out of time. We'll give you 2 minutes for a moment. Mr. Brown.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. I'd like to start with my colleague's statement that you can just plug attached to into the specification everywhere and it all makes sense. And I think the reason I wanted to start there is fundamentally what they're arguing is that the claim language, which says mounted on and mounted in, that the mounted on part can be rewritten as attached to, which is not what it says. These claims specifically contrast mounted on and mounted in. The specification specifically contrasts things that are mounted on with things that are mounted in. As Judge Stark pointed out, the battery is in the handle, the screen is on the handle, and the camera is on the blade. The district court found that there's no disclosure that the camera is inside the blade. And there is extensive discussion throughout the file history, which shows that the inventor himself didn't contemplate having the camera inside the blade and distinguished prior art on the grounds that if you have a camera that is inside a cylinder, that is different. Its view is closely circumscribed.
Do you have a view that mounting means something different than attaching, or is your emphasis more on the distinction between on and in?
I think if I'm forced to answer that question directly, it's more on the distinction between on and in, but I do think that mounting has the context. So it's not just on and in by itself. It's the word on in the context of mounted on, and in the context of mounted on contrasted with mounted in. So I wouldn't disagree that in other contexts, on could have a broader meaning than it does here in the context of mounted on versus mounted in. But I agree with you that mounted by itself means attached. But again, the claim language here is not mounted to. I think we'd have a very different case if the dispute that we were talking about here was mounted to. We don't have that. We have mounted on and mounted in. And respectfully, this concept of the Venn diagram concept that I'm thinking of, one is so expansive that it covers everything, and then in is narrower, so they're different because one is more expansive. That would be more persuasive if the claim said mounted to, but it doesn't. The claim says mounted on, and it says mounted in. And in this context, with this specification and this intrinsic record, the district court got it right. Those two are contrasting concepts. On is only ever used to describe the outside. In is only ever used to describe the inside. Let me talk about George, because I believe that George, that it was incorrect the way it was described to you just a minute ago. If you look at A242, well, first of all, let me back up. George describes two embodiments. One embodiment has the camera at the tip of the stylus, which is also called a malleable tube. That stylus has a breathing tube over it, but when you look in the figure of George, figure two, you can see that the tip of the stylus projects out past the breathing tube, and having a camera at the tip is a camera on the exterior. There's also an embodiment shown in George where what's at the tip is a fiber optic and the camera is back inside the device. There's no question that that camera is inside the device. It's all the way back up at the proximal end of the instrument. But in the embodiment where the camera is at the distal end, at the tip of the device, it's on the exterior. And so if we look at the context that they're citing, where the word on is used at A243, and we go back to the previous page, if I can get it up here. My apologies. So if we look at A243, that's where there's the reference with the word on. And it says right there, George teaches that a camera 6 may be mounted on a distal end. In other words, on the distal end, at the tip, not at the proximal end, which is the other embodiment of George. And if you look at the description that in the previous page on A242 about what they're reviewing, it talks about the camera mounted near that they're two different embodiments. And I'm on lines 23 through 26 on page appendix 242. One embodiment is a camera mounted at the distal end of a tubular probe, and another embodiment is a camera mounted near the proximal end of the tube. So it's expressly disclosing that there are two embodiments. And then when it gets to the next page, it's referring to the one where it's at the distal end, where it is on the exterior. So respectfully, the argument that the discussion of George shows that we are wrong is incorrect. And there's a host of other examples, because my colleague is correct. George was discussed extensively throughout the prosecution history. But I'm just going to read off a list of sites, all of which show that Dr. Baral understood during the course of the prosecution that what he was talking about was the embodiment with the camera on the outside at the tip of the device. Appendix 5714, camera on the end. 3577, camera on a distal end. 3574, the same. 3567, the same. 3598, camera 6 on its distal end 9.
So what's the bottom line on George? There are lots of references to camera mounted on, and why is that not a problem for you?
Because when it's on the distal end, it's on the outside.
How much of it is on the outside? All of it?
I don't know. It's hard to tell from that picture, but it's a solid instrument with the camera at the end.
But it's never talking about the camera being completely inside at the proximal end. All the times it says on, mounted on, it's never talking about the
Correct. That's what I'm telling you, Your Honor.
Dr. Baral wants us to look at.
Correct. That is an embodiment of George. There's no question, but that is not what anybody was talking about. Right. If you think about what they're saying about George, he says, well, the problem is it's on this flexible tube. It moves around. It's not stable. Well, that's because it's talking about the camera at the end of the tube, end of the instrument. So their argument about George is in our view, inconsistent with the record.
Yeah, and in column 4 of George, line 56, it says the camera, alternatively, can be an electronic camera placed at the stylus distal end.
Correct, Your Honor. That is...
That's the other embodiment.
That's the other embodiment. A few lines earlier, it refers... So it's describing figure 2, and it describes both embodiments. The camera up here at the proximal end, where it's inside the instrument, and a camera down here at the distal end, where it's on the outside of the embodiment.
On the prosecution history as a whole, given so much that is said particularly about Hamlin. Are you asking us to find that there was an actual disclaimer, or just that on the whole, the prosecution history along with the rest of the intrinsic evidence favors the district court construction?
There's no, the latter, Your Honor. So there's no need to find disclaimer to rule for us. The question is, in this record as a whole, I think you put, you explained this earlier, looking at the intrinsic record as a whole, the mounted on, mounted in the claims, the consistent description in the specification, the discussion in the specification as a whole, what does it mean here?
So the, how about on doctrine of equivalence, the district court found prosecution history estoppel, which I think is a similar standard. Are you defending that ruling?
I do defend it, Your Honor. But again, you don't need to reach that. So I think it's very clear, and I think this was discussed earlier, and there was a reference to Appendix 8078 about what was argued. The problem with their argument on the insubstantial differences test was that it didn't address the specific claim limitation. That's very clear from their brief. It's clear from the district court holding.
What about their argument that that's an abuse of discretion? Because everybody knew there's just one limitation at issue.
So I think that cannot be correct. So it's certainly true that this was all focused on the interior-exterior issue. But let's think about what was at issue. There's a camera stick, which is a metal device, with a camera inside that looks out through a peephole. There's pictures of that device on page 44 of our brief. That camera stick then has a plastic blade put over the top, and the two things work together. So this statement here on 8078, that a person of ordinary skill in the art would consider it insubstantially different from the claims to have a plastic cover over the camera, seems to be talking about the addition of the disposable, sort of whether you call it a blade cover, I don't think is, it only changes what the result here. But that's what they were talking about there, was the addition of that plastic blade cover. So they can't have been also talking about something else they also have to prove, which is that there's, it can somehow be equivalent that a camera that's fully enclosed in a metal cylinder that looks out through a peephole, which is the undisputed structure of the camera stick, which then slides into the plastic blade.
Do they ever take the position that because the lens is on the end, the camera is external?
They take the position that because the camera can see out, then it is, then it's external.
Or mounted on.
Or mounted on. And the problem with that argument is it's inconsistent with the Supreme Court statement that you can't use infringement of one claim limitation to prove equivalence to another limitation. So there's a separate claim limitation about what the camera has to see. And so the argument that because the camera can see, it is therefore mounted on the exterior and exterior cannot be correct as a matter of law. You can't use the fact that it can see to prove where it is mounted.
There might be a non-frivolous doctrine of equivalence theory that where the camera is located in your device, even when the blade covers it, is insubstantially different than putting it on outside the blade or the outside of the camera stick. But did they ever argue that to the district court in their briefing? This is our insubstantial differences theory.
I mean, I'm going to disagree with the premise, but accepting it, the answer is no. The argument is where you pointed out on 8078, and it's clear that that argument is about the claims as a whole, and it's clear that that argument is about just the plastic cover part and is not addressing the fact that you have a camera that is inside a metal cylinder looking out through a peephole. That's, those facts are undisputed, and that's precisely how they distinguished Hamlin in the prosecution history. So you asked me earlier, Your Honor, about a disclaimer, and even though you don't need to reach it, it is significant that the structure of our product is a camera inside, it's not a tube, it's a square, so it's not a cylinder, it's a whatever the word is for a three-dimensional square or three-dimensional rectangle. But it has an end cap with a hole in it, and it's looking out through that peephole. And that's literally the language that they said is not what he invented, and that's why it's different. So under those circumstances, I would submit that the district court got it right. That even if, and you don't need to, again, you don't need to reach that issue because of the what we've already discussed. But if you do reach that issue, to do exactly what was distinguished expressly in the file history is what prosecution history disclaimer is. So there is a basis for that finding.
I know there's a venue issue that's briefed. It didn't come up. Is it your view and your understanding that if we were inclined to, or if we decided to affirm on the merits, we don't have to reach the venue question? Is that your understanding?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, we still have to reach the venue question.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Their argument is that it should never have been transferred in the first place. You're going to raise that in the final judgment.
That's true. It's part of the final judgment.
Yeah.
I suppose I don't understand how, if there's no literal, if the claim construction is correct and there's no literal infringement and no doctrine of equivalence, I'm not sure why the venue issue could matter.
Wrong even court if, making the decision.
So I don't have law on that one way or the other. I just don't know the answer, Your Honor.
There are answers to the venue. Then one, they didn't make a motion to retransfer, which we said is required. And second of all, the waiver of the venue objection occurred before your client was joined as the party.
Certainly. I think there's clear substantive answers. I would add to what you just said, Your Honor. It can't have been an abuse of discretion for that court to follow the rules of civil procedure in this court's precedent. And what happened, as you just referred to, my client was not a party as itself until its own product was added to the case. And the district court went through all the arguments that they briefed, addressed them all, and they certainly haven't shown an abuse of discretion. Once the product of my client was added to the case, we immediately moved to transfer, and that motion was granted. The court addressed forfeiture. The court addressed waiver. It found neither applied. And there's insufficient evidence to show an abuse of discretion.
Okay. We're out of time. Thank you. Mr. Cernan, you have 2 minutes.
So my friend discussed the supposed second embodiment within George, the one where, so the camera, instead of being sort of embedded way within at the proximal end, it's more at the distal end. Now, in every embodiment in George, the camera is snaked inside the tube. The question we're trying to answer is, okay, it says mounted on the tube of George, again, a dozen plus times. What is that referring to? Whether it's the proximal or the distal end, it is always snaked inside the tube. It is never mounted on the exterior of the tube. And so the best evidence I have of that, again, there's not a figure, but if you look at claim 15, this is appendix 1919, George, the claims, claim 15 says the scope of claim 8, wherein said camera means is a computer chip camera and is located in the distal end of said tube. So that is talking about the
column 4, line 56. It says specifically the camera alternatively can be an electronic camera placed at the stylet's distal end.
So again, that's the stylet. The stylet is what is snaked inside the tube. And when it's being described in the Baral intrinsic evidence, we're talking about mounted on the tube. The key question is, where is it vis-a-vis the tube? It is never on the exterior. It is always on the interior, whether it's proximal or distal. And thus, we know that the usage of mounted on was being used in the broader sense. I would refer you back. I'd urge you to go back and see how they briefed, how Teleflex briefed this to the district court. This is appendix 1844, 45, 47, and 54, 80, and 81. You'll see they're talking about Hamlin and George together, disparaging them as interior mounted cameras, and then we turned that around on them and said, wait, but it's you're using mounted on in the intrinsic
said,
evidence
I
to refer.
I just want to know on venue, are you asking us to address venue?
Absolutely.
Even if we agree on the merits with, let's just say for the sake of argument, with the defendant.
I mean, I think it would sort of be rendered you know, kind of moot if
you want us to transfer to New York just for them to, I don't know, grant enter judgment against you?
I certainly feel strongly about venue. I think it was absolutely waived, absolutely forfeited by Teleflex in the name of Teleflex. They couldn't put on a different hat. But, I think whether or not, I mean, you could just reach venue, send it back, and start over. I think the appropriate thing is to obviously clean up the claim construction and send it back.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, counsel.